Anna Marie Wiley was fired from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills because of her conservative political values.
You're fired.
What we learn from this is that feminism lied. Feminism is not about women supporting women. It's only about supporting women who support leftist ideologies.
What's Uncle Tom but for white women who disappoint other white women?
The repackaging of leftism as feminism will be the demise of Western civilization. Let's talk about why. Okay, so what happened to Anna Marie was revealed by the Daily Mail. The title of this article was Real Housewives of Beverly Hills star Anna Marie Wiley was fired from the show because cast members were disgusted by her right-wing political views, as it's revealed she supports Donald Trump and opposes, the word I'm going to use here is rainbow athletes. So you can fill in the blank there what you think I really mean by that. The summary of the article is the following. Summary idea number one, Crystal King Minkoff, not sure if I said that right, but she did not understand Wiley's support of Trump because he's a racist and everyone thinks he hates minorities, which is simply not true. The cast was also upset that Wiley had defended her husband's video on X where he said that he didn't want to see rainbow men competing against biological women in sports.
But I'll be damned if a male at birth turns into a female and tries to compete against my daughter.
Finally, another cast member, Garcelle Beauvais, was upset that Wiley supported or liked some of the things that Candace Owens said. The takeaway is that feminism lied. Feminism is not about women supporting women. It's only about supporting women whose values we agree with. So what are those values that you have to agree with in order to be a feminist? You have to be a leftist who supports open borders, rainbow policies, and racist DEI initiatives. But wait, I thought feminism was all about equality of the sexes. Turns out you've been tricked. The most pernicious part of leftism repackaged as feminism is the anti-family values that come along with this. Oh, you're a woman who wants to get married? You should be independent and hate all men instead. Oh, you're a woman who wants kids? Just go ahead and abort it. Oh, your kid survived abortion? Dump it in daycare where it comes out with emotional issues that you'll probably pay a lot of money to a therapist for later because the child was not securely attached to its mother. Are these policies making women happy? No, of course not. Their independence and single unmarried status requires them to self-medicate with serious psychiatric drugs and wine.
Oh, fun fact, unlike women, wine gets better with age.
So why would a movement that pretends to be for women actually promote dangerous policies that destroys the lives of women? The reason is very simple. Family is a threat to totalitarian government. If you are loyal first and foremost to your family, there's probably very little loyalty left over for senile presidents and corporate overlords. In fact, if these entities try to hurt your family, there's going to be hell to pay. You're not going to take it. You're actually going to fight back. Should we be vocal like Anna Marie Wiley from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, or should we be quiet in an effort to just get along? Christians in the South have made the choice, to their detriment, that it's best to remain silent in an effort to be liked by everybody. They don't realize that their way of life will no longer exist if they aren't brave enough to stand up and defend it. I know this because I am a DC refugee living in the South. The same messages that led to the demise of DC, which used to, believe it or not, be a totally pleasant place to grow up in, are now being adopted in the early stages in the southern city where I live. What are some of those troubling messages? Well, the first one is a worldly message that has now been adopted by the church. The church is actually complicit in furthering the evil message that men should behave like women. Namely, men should be emotional basket cases. The vibe you get leaving a sermon done by a wannabe Ryan Seacrest pastor is that God loves those who are emotionally out of control more than he loves the emotionally stable. This is troubling because society collapses without stable men. On a personal note, one of the greatest services that both my father and my husband do for me, somebody who can sometimes have very strong emotions, one of those emotions I might have is worrying about various things. One of the greatest things these two men do for me is that they're stable. They're emotionally stable. They're reliable. When they say they're going to do something, they actually follow through on doing it. They're rational. They're logical. They're dependable in an emergency. And finally, they're capable of telling me in kind words, but I'll just say it you know, how it is very simply. They're able to tell me when my feelings aren't valid. They're able to tell me when my feelings are actually lying to me, when I'm being irrational. I am a healthier person because of these great men. Then we have the Southern DEI sympathizers. DEI stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion. One of the most evil manifestations of DEI beliefs is the sentiment that my high school teacher pushed on me when I was a DC student. I was in DC public school. The sentiment that he made us all listen to without the possibility or of an open floor. There was no opportunity for us to debate what he said. And what he said was that everybody played a part in the slavery of the antebellum South, whether or not your family was here in the United States when it happened. This statement is dumb for more reasons than one. And if you're a Southerner listening, you might think, well, that's crazy. That's never going to be said in the South. That's never going to be an idea that's adopted in the South. Unfortunately for you, the South is right around the corner from this. Already at a major employer in the city where I live, there have been conversations overheard between a subordinate and a boss, where the subordinate was asking the boss if it was okay to hire a white male. The implication there is, do we have too many of those? This is a racist policy that judges people based on the color of their skin and not based on their merit. If you need another example of the DEI infiltration of the South, just take it from me. Every day, people are confused about why I would be an advocate for women in STEM being chosen based on their merit instead of based on their gender. I haven't even gotten to the issue of abortion. Some Southern Christians are unsure how they feel about the issue. In particular, they are sympathetic to the idea that abortion should be allowed in cases where, I'm going to use a euphemism because of YouTube, in cases where the child was conceived by force. What they don't realize is that this devaluation of a human life, no matter how the child was conceived, spirals quickly out of control. In DC, abortion is touted as such an essential element to women's rights that seventh graders are debating the topic over lunch. I walked away from these conversations as a seventh grader, feeling that these people felt that abortion was a moral good rather than something regrettable that in their view should be allowed in only certain circumstances. If we decide to give humans the godlike power to decide who is valuable enough to live and who is inconsequential enough that they should die, we should not forget that this power will be expanded, and we risk the fact that this power will be turned against us. We might be the ones who are determined to not matter enough that we should be put to death. Finally, Southerners are soft on the issue of pronouns. They believe that it's loving to respect, especially a child's pronouns. And I am ashamed to admit that even I myself found this argument to be tempting to go along with. Going along with a child's pronouns that do not reflect their biological sex is problematic for many reasons. One of those reasons is that children are likely to grow out of their gender confusion. But more fundamentally, when somebody is asking me to use pronouns that do not actually reflect the biological sex of the person, they are asking me to lie. This is a tactic that is used to humiliate and control us. While this is happening, Southern Christians are silent. Dare to bring up a hot topic at lunch and people look at you with a blank look and quickly change the topic. If you're lucky, a pastor brings up and addresses how we should biblically address a hot topic maybe once a year. When I moved here, I accepted this as part of Southern culture because I wanted to fit in and be liked. But after 4 years of this, I am completely disturbed. The most fundamental role of the church is to communicate its values and worldview. The Christian worldview is that Jesus is 100% man, 100% God, who came on this earth to die for our sins. Defending a worldview requires that you engage with other people's worldviews, namely other faiths, and bring to the table evidence to support your claim that your worldview is the right one. This area of study is called apologetics. The church is happy to defend its beliefs against authorities in other religion, but the one religion they're not willing to stand up against is the religion of secularism. The church is too afraid. And in their fear, they directly disobey the command of the Bible. In Ephesians 4, King James Version, it reads, "Be angry, sin not." The idea is that we should be righteously angry about the sins that make God angry, both the sins that we see going on in the world. We need to stand up and say when things are not right. But also, God is angry about the sin that we allow to happen in our own personal lives. The church's silence and refusal to be angry, sin not, begs a couple of questions. First, if the church, which means both the institution of the church, but also you and me, are unwilling to stand up against evil, who will? The second question is, do people, myself included, really believe our values if we're not willing to stand up for them when times get tough? The answer is starting to feel like no. The third question is, at what point do you become complicit in the promulgation of evil? Not doing anything to stop evil leads to the promulgation of evil. And so what is really the difference between remaining silent and doing the evil myself, since they lead to the same outcome? Don't we bear any responsibility for our silence? These questions disturb me first and foremost because I myself have denied truth for many years with my silence. But with the demise of a second city that I love at the hands of evil that denies ultimate reality, which is Jesus Christ, I am reminded that silence is not an option. The first reason is obvious. Evil is intent on the ultimate destruction of anything that is good. Evil is not content to stay in its lane or agree to disagree. In the end, being quiet isn't going to save me, so I might as well speak up. Secondly, if I deny Jesus's commands about what is right and wrong with my silence, usually because I want to be liked, what is really the difference between that and denying Jesus Christ himself? I'm no theologian, but the two don't seem that different to me. In the end, it's a waste of time to debate with God about why he made it so costly to tell the truth. The fact remains that hard times are on the horizon for traditional people. The only question worth asking is, what are you going to do about it? That is it for today. I will see you guys in the comments and on the next episode.